Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Another exciting show on the mark for Franchise Today as Susan Bepp, operating partner at NRD Capital, joins me and my co-host, Stan Friedman. Stan, good morning or good afternoon as you are in Atlanta.
I am in Atlanta, and it is a good afternoon, Paul. I think we are in the early throes of spring, and I don't need to check the thermometer or any further than my sneezing sinuses, because we're at the early pollen stages as Atlanta is in full bloom.
Well, as I am sitting here looking out at Lake Woodlands, it's spring break, so there's a bunch of people out on the lake paddleboarding today, and I'm thinking, you know, Stan, if we ever need money, maybe you come here with a video camera and I get my big butt out on a paddleboard and we're sure to win funniest home video.
I just think that paints a picture that might be in the too much information category. I don't know, Paul.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Stan, we know we got the Franchise Finance Conference, you know, wrapping up in Las Vegas, and safe travels to everybody heading back from Sin City. And remember, what goes on in Vegas stays on Facebook and YouTube.
Boy, is that ever true. It is,
yeah,
so true.
Absolutely. And Vine and Snapchat and everything else. So,
well,
Stan, what we've got in the news today?
Just looking over some things in the front of the house, Paul, another reminder to our audience that with all of the threats that are industry heightening importance, continuing to bubble up, please, please, please be sure to register for this year's Legal Symposium, May 15th through 17th in Washington, D.C. This is a must-attend event for in-house counsel, private attorneys, as well as franchise executives who need to have their finger on the pulse of all of the latest breaking impact that legislation is having on our industry and our business model. So this year, if you've never attended before, make this the first and most important year to attend the IFA Legal Symposium in D.C. And talking about legislators, I saw something in the IFA Insider that at first blush I thought included a photo. There was a photograph that I thought included Gordon Logan, as more than 20 IFA members met with California state legislators on March 8th at the state capitol in Sacramento. They were there as part of the fourth annual IFA California Franchising Day. The delegation represented a number of brands and industries, including Fast Signs, Home Instead Senior Care, KFC, Mr. Reuter, Plumbing Doctor, Interim Healthcare, and Molly Maids. And so when I read all those brands and then looked at the photo, I didn't see Gordon's brand represented. And I thought, well, this guy wearing a cowboy hat, that must be Gordon Logan, but it wasn't. It was a bunch of the delegates meeting with a guy named Frank Bigelow, who is wearing a hat as every big as Gordon's hat, but you can't just judge books by covers. So I assumptively mistook the picture to include Gordon, but it in fact was not. Also on the legal front, the NLRB joint employer case involving McDonald's restarts tomorrow, and it marks the start of a trial to determine whether McDonald's can be held liable for the actions of its franchisees. The saga continues. And on the other side of the coin, as we try to do here as well, not just doom and gloom about the things that are wrong with the industry, I caught something this week in the IFA Insider that was a profile on a franchisee. And you know, it's these kinds of things that we need to be pushing more out. And I think under Aziz Hashim's leadership at the chair of IFA this year, we're going to be doing more pushing out the messaging of what franchising really is all about. This week's franchisee featured a franchisee named Kimberly Tosh, and franchising for her has been a blessing, she says. With the majority of the heavy lifting done already, franchising allows me to focus on the things I love, getting in front of the customers and exciting my team about everything we're doing because of the systems in place that have been put in place by Nestle's Toll House Cafe and Red Mango. I've had more time to do what's important to me because I'm a franchisee. That's the kind of stuff that we need to hear more of. And also, Paul, another similar storyline with a franchise owner offering solutions for changing the cycle of poverty in America. And this came out in the form of a press release from IFA's Matt Haller and Jenna Weisbord. And what it tells us, datelined March 15th, is franchising is uniquely situated to address the problem of poverty in America and affect serious change by encouraging employment for those who need it most. This according to Azim Saju, Vice President and General Counsel for HDG Hotels. Saju submitted a statement for the record today on behalf of the IFA to the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Resources, which held its first in a series of hearings to address a problem plaguing our nation, poverty. The economic numbers for franchising are impressive, but even statistics can't capture the true story of franchising, he said. And he talked about how he and his family moved from East Africa to the U.S. in 1972 when his parents began franchising shortly thereafter after reading an article on owning your own business while relying on a proven brand. Well, in 2003, Saju and his brother founded HDG Hotels. Today, they employ more than 400 people, own and operate 12 hotels across Florida as franchisees of choice, International Hotels Group, Hilton, and Wyndham. And Saju cited that both employers and the government alike have a role in reducing poverty, but these efforts should not run counter to one another and should not be banging heads against one another. As employers generate opportunity, assistance programs must be constructed to encourage advancement rather than reward complacency. This is, to me, the epitome of public-private sector finding ways to make life better, working together, each doing what we do best instead of trying to legislate, regulate, and just make the horrors of our business model with lawyers being the only ones that win. So, Paul, there is those kinds of you know, tidbits of some good news, and I like to bring those forward as well as sharing what we must to be responsible about the perils that face our industry. But these are the kinds of human interest pieces of franchising that we need to be talking more about. And lastly, Paul, I just want to segue into your introduction of today's guests by calling again attention to the fact that nominations are open for 2016 Franchising Gives Back Awards. Nominations are now open for Franchising Gives Back Awards on June 17th. You get to share your story. Winners will be honored at the second annual Franchising Gives Back Celebration and Awards Dinner on September 12th in Washington, D.C. And you can get more information on all of this at the IFA's website at franchise.org. But I think we're going to be spending the next 30 or so minutes, Paul, with somebody who sits right at the center of all that Franchising Gives Back, doesn't she?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we go there, Stan, to ride what you were saying about Aziz Hashim, I know his platform is Be Ambassadors of Franchising. And to that end, Deb Evans and Deb Evans Consulting, along with the folks at Pino's Palette, is doing a Women's Franchise Network event here in Houston next Tuesday night. And the focus is how franchise professionals can be ambassadors of franchising. And I think it's very, very important. And one last thing, I do want to thank last week's guest, Dr. John Hayes, for being on with us from Kuwait. I know Dr. Hayes is going through some really difficult times right now with his wife being sick, and my heart and prayers and thoughts certainly go out to him and his family at this time.
Absolutely. Could not agree with you more, Paul. It was great hearing from Dr. Hayes last week, and John has been a 20-plus year friend, and I've learned so much from him over the years. I just don't understand how he can manage the life that he's living in as an expatriate with his wife being ill and teaching and all that's on his plate so far from home. So my prayers, my thoughts, and I'm certain everyone in our audience will fire theirs as well his way, and all the best to the Hayes family.
Absolutely. Well, as I said at the top of the show, Susan Beth, operating partner in NRD Capital, joins us today. She'll be shedding some light on what her and her team at NRD Capital look for in a franchise brand, you know, around the things we call the cornerstones of franchising, including unit economics, culture, making the proper investments, and more. You know, I want really the emerging brands that are listening to the show to really take some notes today, because I think Susan's going to really shed some very, very good points that you should heed. And without further ado, I would like to introduce one of my my feel for one of the best ambassadors of franchising and somebody that's always given back, Susan Beth. Susan, welcome back to Franchise Today.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Great to be talking with you.
Awesome.
You know, I remember the first time, Susan, I had you on the show as I was doing it just as a single host back then, and it was a special show when you had launched a Dealmakers Summit. And today, I'm glad to be sitting at a desk. As I recall that day, I was actually in a storage closet in the dark in a restaurant trying to get that show done. Of course, nobody knew that was the case. But anyway, it's great having you back on the show.
Thank you. And thank you for all the support. Yeah, the journey for Dealmakers and Franchise Capital Exchange has been a big cornerstone for me, to use that word again, getting me to NRD Capital and the things I'm getting to do today. So thanks for your part in that journey.
You're welcome. You know, I read a quote as I was preparing for the show that you had, and I think it actually came back from the announcement when you went on to NRD Capital, and you said, "I don't do well with micromanagement and bureaucracy. That's not what I was raised on. It's not who I am personally. If you give me a task and freedom, it will get done." I think that's just, I don't think anything that I know could explain you any better.
Thank you. That was also some insider knowledge to Aziz on how he and I were probably going to work best together. So it was good to get it in print.
Yeah, absolutely. I also loved that time that you said as you broke the news to your family, as you were leaving the family business, that they knew who Aziz was now, and you had said, and you don't recommend he being in Illinois for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, or probably neighboring states either.
You know what, Susan?
It's been a year now. I guess it's right at about a year. And I know you've gone through some exciting things. And I think they all lead into what we were talking about or want to talk about today, which are the keys of sustainable franchising. And like to, you know, lead down the path of telling us, you know, what it is that, you know, NRD Capital is doing. And let's then go into, you know, what you're looking for in the brands that you're looking to work for, and then how our listening audience obviously can learn from this and maybe prepare themselves so one day that maybe a private equity firm comes knocking on their door. So the past year has been definitely a whirlwind. I mean, you're definitely a frequent flyer these days. Tell us a little bit about the experience, you know, coming right out of the box.
Yeah, whirlwind is definitely the key word there to summarize it. You know, I was actually just at one of our portfolio brands in Cincinnati, Ohio yesterday, Frisch's Big Boy Restaurant, and I had gathered the whole team there just to kind of explain a week in the life sort of thing. And it was just simply so that they, you know, they know kind of where we're at when we're not with them. And I think I can encapsulate the entire year by giving you a snapshot of what one seven-day period looked like for us coming off of the end of the IFA convention of 2016. And that is that obviously we were in San Antonio with all of our franchised friends at the convention kind of Friday through Tuesday. On Tuesday at noon, Aziz took the gavel and received the gavel for the IFA to become the next chairman. We bought Fuzzy's Taco Shop on Thursday. We did all the press announcements on Friday. Our team flew to Fort Worth on Monday. We did the integration meeting Monday afternoon, the celebration dinner Monday night, and held the first board meeting on Tuesday. And then we flew home and went back to work. And so that's just kind of the pace that I'm finding private equity moves at. And I have a lot of buddies that have been in private equity for a lot of years that that knew this and that lived this, and I kind of saw their schedule. But it really is the pace that this environment moves at. And the whole last year, you know, has been that. And even though it's a, you know, NRD Capital Fund 1 is about a $50 million fund, which in the grand scheme of private equity is, you know, barely registers on the private equity Richter scale, given, you know, that there's many hundreds of millions of dollar funds out there. And certainly we have friends that run billion-dollar funds. And so we're very, very, very tiny baby in the infancy stage. But even though to most of us $50 million is still a large checkbook, we're still a startup. And so it's really called on my startup skills. And it's really, you know, had Aziz and I coming together to put our minds and thoughts towards being entrepreneurs again. You know, we've both grown businesses and been a part of kind of that legacy building. But it was coming back to just being scrappy. And what I mean by that is making, you know, making decisions that, with the best facts that you had at the time and knowing you were going to stumble along the way and trying to course correct when something like that happened. But, you know, it was back to us taking, you know, lots of years, 50, 60 years of franchise experience and business experience and putting that into play, but doing it as a startup again. You know, neither he or I, by training or by trade, are private equity guys. So we're learning that side of the business. And I want to just kind of speak to the emerging brands out there that some of the struggles and some of the frustrations that they're going through growing their franchisor system, or even certainly a franchisee getting into the business and starting from the ground up, you know, I think Aziz and I have felt some of those same frustrations because we're in a similar boat. You know, we all go in with our experiences, but it's still a startup.
You know, Susan, Paul and I and a great many in our audience know you, and it don't require much more of an introduction other than hearing that Susan Beth is in the room, and we all light up a smile because we know who you are, we know what you've accomplished, and we know what you bring to any audience that gets to hear from you. But for those in our audience, and I'm going to toot your horn for you here, for those in our audience that don't know your history and your family business and what prepared you for the position you're in today, and for those in our audience that don't know that you're not just a one-time but a twice, you know, honored national award winner in the franchising world for your work mentoring women entrepreneurs and working with the Women's Franchise Council, our audience is being treated to some real pearls of wisdom, some nuggets, as our friend Brian Schnell would say today, but from somebody who's got a life in franchising that when you look at her, you'd not think she'd been alive long enough to contain all that wisdom. Tell us a little bit about your history and what prepared you for this role that you're in now, and then take us forward from there.
Yeah, thank you for all those kind words, Dan. I always appreciate that. So, the big background is that my parents are the founders of the nation's largest self-serve car wash chain, and that is the legacy that I was born into, and I feel blessed every day that that is what I went through. When I was in the throes of the family business, I probably lost sight of that blessing a couple times, you know, as you're battling it out with family members.
Absolutely.
and feeling like you're slogging through it. But I'll tell you what, perspective is a powerful thing, and I try and be grateful every day for each one of those experiences. But my mom was 3 months pregnant with me, putting the roof on the very first car wash they ever built, and that was in 1976. And so I literally came into this world of superwash and the car wash business as a part of it, you know, started working in the business when I was 4 years old and really got to live the life of an owner-operator and watched my parents go through the startup struggles and then go through really, really big boom years, you know, where we were building 60, 70 stores a year, and we were the general contractor. So we were starting and finishing a store every 3.5 days or so. You know, we had moved whole crews across the country to be based in Utah, and then we built out Arizona. We did some work in Texas. You know, the Big Ten country of sports, if you will, as we get ready for NCAA basketball this week. But the Big Ten country is home for us and is where the majority of our locations were, based in a tiny little town in Morrison, Illinois. And it was just a high school biology teacher and a radiology secretary from the local hospital that had a big dream and had a ton of support from family and financial support from them as well, to the tune of $10,000, which, you know, they had $17.42, no house and no car to their name. So I got to live and grow up in a true Cinderella story. My sister Jen is an absolute brilliant financial mind. And so I got to grow up watching that with her. And, you know, she ran my mom and dad's first car wash starting when she was sort of 10, 11 years old and had to schlep her little sister along with her. And you know, we used to do things like ride our bikes down to the car wash and pull money, which back then was truly predominantly quarters. And we would ride our bikes with bags of quarters up to the bank. So you could do that in the early 80s, right? You could do that in the early 80s and be generally safe. Now, remember, I was only going about a mile and a half. My hometown only has, well, it has four stoplights now. And when they put the fourth one in, my dad largely protested. But it's a small town, so it wasn't too far to the bank. But, you know, those are things that kids will never have the chance to do today. And that was my kind of my base. And then when I was 19 and I was a sophomore in college, my dad really wanted my sister and I to invest in a superwash. And there was a lot of back and forth around that as well and whether it was the right time. We ended up buying our first store in a resort town called Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, which was 3 hours away from where I was going to college and where my sister was a practicing CPA. And, boy, that was a total turnaround situation. The car wash had been greatly abused and abandoned because of some health concerns by the prior licensee. We had a total turnaround. I'm very proud to say that store went on to have its best year ever after our ownership takeover in its 13th year of business, had its best year ever. And, you know, my sister and I were the only female franchisees of the superwash system ever. And so that's still something I'm very proud of, too. When we bought that store, I said, I will never do another rehab again because it comes with a whole bunch of baggage. And so we went, and when I was 22 or 3 or somewhere right in there, we built a store from the ground up. And at the grand opening, somebody drove their very large trailer into one of our self-serve bays and ripped off our roof. And I said, I will never build a new store again. So you guys know there's only two ways, right? Either, you know, rehab one or you build one. And so I had kind of limited my development options at that point. So we did the other natural thing, and we bought one that we didn't have to do anything to, and the company managed that for us. So I spent 9 years as a multi-unit franchisee. In the time when I graduated from college, my parents had a rule, a policy, a strong encouragement, a recommendation that we both went and worked somewhere else before we came back to the family business. You had to go see what it was like on the outside and live that. And so we did. I left. I went to the big city and did that whole thing. And I came back to Superwash. It wasn't a franchisor at the time. It was a licensor to run the conversion from licensing to franchising. Did that, ran their franchise department for many years, started doing development work for them, working with incoming prospective franchisees. My dad and I are the only two salespeople, kind of quote-unquote, in the history of Superwash at this point that sold new stores. And then, you know, just kind of moved through the ranks. And then I had all the franchisees. And then I took over our corporate stores as well, which is about 150 locations at the time. When I left in December of 2014, we were about 130 locations. So Superwash is an interesting system, equally split between independently owned and operated stores and franchise stores. So when I left, I had about 130 company stores that I was responsible for, about 130 franchise locations, all new store development, strategic partnerships, so on and so forth. In the meantime, I had started the conference company that Paul referenced earlier, Dealmakers, which became Franchise Capital Exchange, where I was partnering franchisors who were looking for equity partners with equity capital. I had no idea why that vision was given to me and why I couldn't get it to leave my head. Hindsight being 2020, I have a little better idea now why that vision was given to me. At the encouragement of my dear friend and mentor, Fred DeLuca, I started my own professional speaking business. And so I go out and I'm hired to do keynote speeches for franchisors to motivate their franchisees and to share the message about, you know, filling your passion bucket and keeping your passion bucket full and taking bold risks and that kind of stuff. And then I was serving on the IFA Board of Directors with my friend Aziz Hashim, and he told me about the private equity fund, and I was being courted by a couple of companies to be their CEO, COO, smaller startup companies, and I asked him to review a company with me because it was going to need funding, and I knew about his equity group was coming, and we chased that company for a while, and he said, what do you think? And I said, you know, I think it's a neat company. It's just not one I'm passionate enough about that I want to run it for the next 5 or 10 years of my life. But I knew I was feeling pretty restless. It had been about 3.5 years that I'd really been struggling with how long to stay in the family business and when to go and where do I go. And I wanted to stay in Illinois. My husband and my two kids are, you know, entrenched here, as am I. Our family is all here. So what do I do? And And Aziz asked me that question, how I feel about that company. And I said, I think it's a really good company, just not for me. And he said, good, I want you to come work at the fund. And I said, I have no idea what that means. And so we talked about it, and that was on a Thursday. Halloween was on Friday. I took Saturday off. I wrote my own job description on Sunday. I sent it to him Monday morning. I drove to the Superwash headquarters, trained a Superwash franchisee that morning, called my family in Monday afternoon, showed him their picture on the front of Franchise Times, and I said, I think the best opportunity in franchising just found me, and I think I'm going to take a shot. And that is how we get to this place, and the perspective that I bring, I think it's a pretty unique one that I've gotten to live the life of an owner-operator. I've been a franchisee, so I've written the checks, and I understand what it feels like to stress whether you can make payroll or not on Friday night. I've been a franchisor and felt the weight of franchisees and their situations and corporate store ops and employees on my shoulders. I've been a founder of a business, so I was a supplier to the franchise industry too. And now I get to be the equity capital, and I get to come in and be the investment arm that allows companies to reach their full potential. And so it's a pretty unique 360.
Who better and with what better profile and life experience could somebody actually fall into the role of a lifetime to be able to look at companies and see what you see not only on balance sheets or P&Ls, but through the eyes of the founders, the vision, the values, the ethics, the operations, and understand all of it, both the emotional as well as the business side that goes into a company that's at that stage of maturity where private equity might actually make sense. Susan, what's a day in the life look like now? How do you go about bringing the best of all these talents and skills together with looking at the right companies or helping them find you? What's that look like?
Yeah, it really depends on the day, which is probably the funnest part for me. I am not a girl who can do the same thing day in and day out and be excited about it. And so every day it's a different fire. It's a different challenge. Obviously, when we're in the throes of a deal, everything's moving really, really fast. And we're a very small team. Aziz is our managing or general partner, and myself is one operating partner, and we have another partner, Harrison Price, who does most of the financial aspect of our team, is based in Dallas. And so a day in the life is that we're working with our two portfolio brands, Frisch's Big Boy Restaurants and Fuzzy's Taco Shop. We're working with them as they need us, different needs in both of those organizations. So as they need us, and then we are evaluating new opportunities, and we are, you know, they come to us either kind of opportunistically, like they find us through the website, or they might hear us on this show, or they'll see Aziz through something with the IFA or one of the many events that either he or myself or Harrison are at, and so we learn about companies in that way. We're also looking at very specific companies. We know what we want the portfolio to look like, and we know the types of things that really get us excited. So we try to proactively go out and reach out to companies that have caught our interest for one reason or another. And so we try and do that as well. And there's a fair amount of discussion because we are still a startup and we want to stay true to the spirit of the fund and what the fund was intended to do. And, you know, you guys know you can get caught on the hamster wheel. And so you keep going so fast that you kind of lose sight of exactly why you're here and what you're trying to accomplish. So a part of some of those days are spent making sure that we're staying true to who we are and how we want to treat people and be respectful and give back to this community. We try. Sometimes it gets really, really hard, and I know I've probably let some people down, but we try very hard to have a personal response to every inquiry that we get into NRD Capital, and whether that's by phone or by email, by LinkedIn. And sometimes it is very, very hard to get, you know, stay caught up, and we know we miss some folks, but that's important to us. You know, we've gained a lot from this industry, and we feel like we could be, you know, helpful, and that's one way to pay it forward. So lots happens in any given day.
This is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segreto, and our guest, esteemed serial entrepreneur, IFA National Award winner, CFE, and consummate Pay It Forward franchise executive, Susan Beth, operating partner at NRD Capital. Franchise Today is brought to you by Paul Segreto's Franchise Foundry, Franchise Foundry is a business accelerator that boasts more than 30 years of experience helping emerging brands bring sustainable growth to their franchise systems. At Franchise Foundry, Paul and his team utilize a hybrid coaching and consulting approach that fosters the development and deployment of effective short and long-term solutions for their clients. These in franchise operation and management, change management, traditional and digital marketing, relationship and business management, technology, and, of course, domestic and international franchise recruitment and development. Franchise Foundry can also assist franchise brands with raising capital and the exploration of merger and acquisition opportunities. You can learn more about their expanding list of clients across various industry segments at franchisefoundry.com. That's www.franchisefoundry.com for Paul Segretto's Franchise Foundry. Franchise Today is also brought to you by FRM Solutions, where we offer the best-in-class CRM and content management software designed specifically for franchising. Built-in industry-leading Microsoft Dynamics CRM, our solutions are cloud-based or fully functional from right inside your Outlook inbox. Everything you need to effectively manage relationships with prospective and existing franchisees is easily accessible from a PC, a Mac, smartphone, or tablet. With FRM Solutions, you're empowered to accelerate franchise sales, streamline store openings, enhance collaboration, and better manage your processes and workflows, and franchisee performance and compliance, all part of the mix. With FRM, you can even track and manage all of your communications with your prospective franchisees, and not just emails, but text messages as well. Check us out at frmsolutions.com and see how easy it is to sort, report, and dashboard all of your vital data. No hassles, no long-term contracts, no excuses, just solutions. Check us out at frmsolutions.com. Paul, take it from there, because I know you've got another question or two for Susan.
Well, the first thing I want to say, when you gave that laundry list of accolades about Susan, you left off the one of the brightest smiles in franchising. And I say that because as busy as Susan is, I rarely have seen, and I can't even remember a time where I haven't seen her smiling. And certainly when you walk up to her, there's always that smile. So I think, you know, a big part of your success stems from, you know, having that right attitude at the right time. And I think that's just absolutely fantastic.
We just have to help her get her over her shyness, though, isn't that right?
Yeah, right.
Well, and I'm so glad that this is being recorded for quality assurance purposes, so I can play this for my husband on the days that I'm not smiling at the end of the day. So thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate that.
Well, the thing that I was laughing about before when you were saying that you got on your bike and it was safe, and I'm thinking, God, if anybody saw, you know, some of your Facebook pictures of you shooting a shotgun would definitely consider you safe.
You know, that's right.
You know, franchise brands, as Stan had said at the beginning of the show, I mean, obviously there's different forms of attack on franchising. And obviously there's a right way and there's a wrong way of doing anything. And in franchising, I mean, obviously as we, you know, at Franchise Foundry, work with brands that or companies and founders that want to entertain franchising as a growth strategy. You know, we tell them, you know, you got to have the cornerstones in place. You know, you've got to have the proven business model. You have to be prepared to have that type of right fit culture. You have to be prepared to make the investment of becoming a franchisor and no longer an independent business owner, so to speak. So as you're looking at franchise brands, and I'm sure you must get a lot of inquiries, you know, what do you look for and how does that initial conversation go when you're trying to find out from the founder what it is that they actually have?
You know, this is probably been one of the hardest things for me, because you guys also know about me that I get very attached to people and I get very attached to their stories. And so sometimes it's hard for me to maintain my objectivity when I hear their, you know, a founder story about what they've been through and some of the challenges that they're facing. But it really does come down to some pretty basic, you know, basic facts. And one is, you know, is it a concept that is able to be replicated? I have a brand in my mind right now that to this day, I still love this brand. And this is from my pre-NRD years. And I love the concept. I know it would be, it's needed in the world and so on and so forth. But it's really hard to replicate because of the system and the model and the information that is being used in it. So it's more of a company store play. So one is it really something that can be replicated? Two is, you know, we look at a lot of food. Probably very naturally, we have gotten very buried in food right now. And that's really where Aziz's expertise is at. Mine is clearly more on the service retail side and on the people side. But, you know, he knows food in and out. And he's looked at hundreds of brands over the years when he was a franchisee. And so we've looked at a ton of food. Is it a unique, truly unique product service experience? And that's whether it's food or not. So those are some of the things we look at. And then we dive in. For us, it's really important that we go and once, you know, the early metrics are kind of proven out and we can look at a quick snapshot and say yes or no, and I can back into what those metrics are, we want to go experience it. We want to taste it. We want to touch it. We want to enjoy the service or not. We want to be able to experience it because we feel like that's, you know, really part of our experience as investors is to go live it. But some of those metrics that you're talking about are we look at the number of units that are open and operating. For us, we like to be somewhere between sort of 35 and 150, and I'll explain why that parameter. But we like to see that number amount of build-out. We like to see that they've been franchising for at least 3 years. And the reason for that is, you guys know as well as I know, that P&L floats all over the place for a period of time. Until you can get all your systems and processes in place, you get enough people up to snuff and up to speed in their business, you know, you could have cost of goods for one franchisee being 67% and the next franchisee is at 38%. So you got to get some time in there for that to balance out and to give it a little bit of a run rate. And so that's why those early stage folks that haven't been doing it very long, the numbers are hard for us. And I'll come back and talk a little bit later about our LPs and why that P&L is so important for us. And then we're going to look, is there a mix of company stores and franchise locations? And we get asked a lot if there is a sweet spot. We don't know exactly what the sweet spot is. It depends on the brand and what the concept is and what the need is. But we like to see when the company has some company stores. First of all, it drops EBITDA. Hopefully it drops EBITDA for the corporate bottom line. But also, Aziz growing, you know, coming up as a franchisee, me coming up in a system that had a ton of company stores, our view is that you want to be able to have skin in the game and you got to really understand your business. And we test on ourselves first. This is one of the key things that Bob and Mary Black, my parents, taught me. Test on yourself first. Do not use other people's money to test the theory. And so that, you know, when we're in a brand, we want to know that they've tested on themselves first and have that opportunity. So for us, we're also, the key metric we're going to come down to is, can the franchisee fundamentally make money in this brand? And we don't just mean a little bit of money. We mean, can they make a wage that they can support their family on? Now, let's be reasonable. We're not talking that somebody's got to kick out 150 or 200 grand here. But you've got to have a supportable, you know, amount of money coming out of that business. Most folks that are going to become franchisees could go work for, quote, unquote, the man and make 50 or 60 grand a year. So why would they go through the risk and the stress and all that comes along with being a small business owner, if the payoff is not going to be greater than what they could do, and certainly if it's going to be less than what they could make working for somebody else, why would they do that? And so that unit level piece is absolutely crucial to NRD.
That's, definitely some solid criteria. Are there any, and I know there's always warning signs, but are there any absolute fire alarms that go off that you immediately say, this is not for us?
Yeah, really, if the units don't make any money, and so take a system, right, that would be predominantly franchised, and then have it be young, and then have the franchisees not making any money yet. That is three strikes, you're out. And that's unfortunately the place that many franchisors find themselves in, is that they went into franchising. I'm going to go back to a fundamental challenge of being a franchisor. It's expensive to become a franchisor. It's time consuming, and it is a huge investment. And many, many franchisors go in undercapitalized from the beginning. And when you go in undercapitalized from the beginning, it starts a very heavy snowball rolling. And that is that you've got to sell the next store to get the franchise fee in, to keep the lights on, to get, right? And then that snowball just starts rolling. And in franchising, it takes time for those franchisees to get to a place where the royalty that they contribute back to the franchisor is going to drop through to their bottom line and give them any kind of EBITDA. And most folks are going to hear that EBITDA number. That's the one that most private equity folks, they look at cash, what's available for us to invest on that we're going to take our investors' money and you know, double down with.
Sure, sure. Are there any circumstances, situations that you run into, and I know, as you said, you get very emotionally attached to a brand, and I think it's, you know, obviously more than just a feel-good story. I mean, I think you probably are starting to look in and say what you could do, you know, with the brand if given the chance. Are there any circumstances where you look at something and you say, the time is not right, but Mr. Founder, if you were to do this and achieve this over this period of time, we would be interested in coming back and looking at the potential of a partnership or an acquisition?
Absolutely. We have one right now that we talked with last year. There was a lot of challenges in that business. You know, lots of the corporate P&L were out of whack. And so we made our recommendations. They did the very, very hard and not fun work that all of us have done before, that kind of right-sizing the situation. And they brought on some people that they needed to bring on. And, yeah, we would love to be back in conversations and, you know, and start going forward. Again, as long as the product or the service or the food or whatever is at the top of its game, most of the, you know, the financial aspect, if you're willing to do the hard work and, you know, you didn't spend, this is also part of the challenge, guys, that I've really learned is how crucial it is that initial investment not be out of whack. It's got to be, it's got to be able to make money. And if you spend too much in the beginning, you're going to be drowning for a long time.
Sure.
So don't overbuild, right? You don't need to build Taj Mahals, as my dad used to say. We're just building car washes. They don't need to be Taj Mahals. You don't have to build the Taj Mahal, right? It's got to be functional. It's got to wash a car and do it really, really well. But we would like for this thing to kick off cash. So, you know, those kinds of things, we watch a lot of people overbuild. Because it's, whether it's ego or whether it's what you think is going to differentiate you, but that initial build-out has got to make sense. And again, to quote my mom, every time I wanted to do something, whether it was buy a bicycle or my new car or whatever it was going to be, she would always say, Susan, how many cars do you have to wash to pay for that? And it's the same thing in business, right? How many, now I'm selling Big Boy sandwiches at Frisch's, right? How many Big Boys do we have to sell to recoup the investment on that piece of equipment or on that thing? And is it worth it? And I think there's a lot of franchisors and franchisees that could heed that advice more strongly than they do right now.
Hey, Susan, I want to turn to the other side of the equation. As a sponsor this past year at the Franchise Capital Exchange, I really enjoyed watching the program and seeing the range of companies, franchisors that were pitching to the PE people that were in the room. And, you know, it struck me that it's not very terribly different than a prospective franchisee when they're making an investment in a franchise as a unit operator. There are so many different brands with so many different pieces and parts in terms of maturity of the brand that could come into play as to how they're going to fit into that culture. How does it work on this side? I mean, some of the people that I saw at the Capital Exchange were looking for an exit strategy. They were looking for a way out. Some were looking for capital to further grow and expand and stay in. You know, when you look at concepts like Fuzzies and the others that are upcoming in your portfolio, are you actually taking owners out, or are you investing for the owners to stay in, continue managing, and have resources and tools that you bring to the party and direction and guidance that you bring, or are you looking for both?
Yeah, all of the above. And, you know, I spent the last 18 months of my career at Superwash looking at strategic partnerships and opportunities for that company and providing some options to my family at Superwash. So I've been on every side of this desk, and I can tell you that there are a lot of personalities out there in the private equity world. And what I mean by that is, just because you meet one private equity fund and you give your pitch and they may say, no, this isn't right for us for this, this, or this reason, that doesn't mean that it's, you don't tell the story again, because there's going to be another group that's looking for something completely different or that's trying to invest their money in different ways. You know, some private equity groups are short-term holds, meaning sort of 3 to 5 years. Some are sort of midterm holds, sort of 7 to 10 years, and some are long-term holds. And so each of these groups has a very, private equity groups has a very different personality. Some are very much up in your business. Like they're going to be there every day and they're going to be wringing every penny out of it. And that is a fact. And then some of them are going to be more hands-off and they're coming in for their quarterly board meeting. I would say NRD Capital strategy is to be somewhere in the middle. You know, some of the stuff that... Go ahead.
How do you count? No, I was going to ask how, as a follow-up, just a, or even a continuation, not a follow-up so much, but how do you counsel a franchise company on how, who teaches them how to interview or consider which PE companies might be right for them? I mean, to me, there's like the difference between a prospect for a franchise going to a portal and clicking in just indiscriminately on different companies to try to get information from them, or somebody who goes to a franchise or a Franet or has a professional broker helping them do their own introspective, figuring out what it is they should do, why they should do it, who's going to be part of that equation with them. Who helps a franchise company that might be ready for private equity figure out, whether it's the NRDs or the Rourkes or countless other companies in between, how does the franchisor know where the right cultural fit would be, or whether they're looking to talk with a company that's appropriate for where they are at their stage of maturity? Is there any resource out there, or is it just potluck?
Well, unfortunately, I do believe it's a little bit of potluck, and that was the original vision behind DealMakers and then Franchise Capital Exchange, was that I was in exactly that boat. You know, I was not in a position where I could pay several $1,000s a month in retainer to an investment banker, which they are traditionally the middle of the transaction, right? They're going to be the counsel in the middle that works between the franchisor and the variety of private equity groups out there. And there are many, many wonderful investment bankers out there who provide great counsel. But there is a price tag attached to that. And I was not in a position where I could budget for that. And so I had to do it a bit on my own. And you kiss a lot of frogs. And, you know, there's just a lot of, you do a lot of resource checking and you look at the brands that they've worked with. And if you know somebody there, you try and reach out. But there are a lot of great private equity companies that are in this space. But again, they all have different personalities. They all have different outcomes that they're looking for. You know, at NRD, we don't see ourselves as the company that's supposed to make an investment. Let me use Fuzzy's Taco Shop, right? A awesome, super cool, very trendy company that has great legs, amazing unit economics, 92 units, 11 states. Do we see it as our place to take them to being in all 50 states and having 1,000 units? No, that's not what NRD Capital does. NRD Capital helps, you know, kind of helps the whatever you'd call my kids, who are kind of 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids, right, helps them turn into teenagers. And then somebody else takes them from teenager to adult, right? The founders have kind of gotten them from being little baby infants. Now we get them at school-age children. We're supposed to take them from school-age to high school years. And then somebody else needs to take them and take them across the country. And that's just everybody realizing where your core competencies are And to go back to a question Paul asked earlier, what are the things that we look for when we're making an evaluation? We made an evaluation of a great company that all of us were familiar with. We liked the product. We enjoy the brand. It was already several hundred units. And the call at NRD was this: can we still add value here? And that's the crucial question, right? Can we buy it? Sure, we could buy it. But do we add value to their organization so that when we go to sell it in 3 to 5 years, everybody recognizes the bigger bite of the apple?
Wow, that's I love that value proposition. Too many times, you know, we miss that. But I think looking at the long term, I think that's just fantastic foresight on that, Susan. You know, there's so many questions. I mean, we could probably talk 2 or 3 hours easily on this, and we're coming to the top of the hour. As you talked about, you know, taking them, the founders of the baby steps, and I know, you know, some of our little niche is, as I say, you know, taking them from that infant stage through the toddler stage, and then I talk with different companies about taking them, and then, of course, you guys take them when they're in high school, and then some others take them all the way through to retirement, so to speak. There are so many different, you know, levels. One thing that I want you to touch on, because this is inherent in any business today, how important is it that the founders have recognized that technology is a big component? Because I would imagine if you're working with a brand and they've made no investment into technology, I mean, that's got to be a significant factor for you to consider as well.
You know, I would say, again, it really depends on the brand, because I've seen brands that didn't need the level of technology that they have. Again, they built the Taj Mahal when they really needed a nice, you know, just a nice building that got it done. And so I've watched it go both ways, where you've gone in undergunned, and if you would have put in appropriate technology platforms, so on and so forth, you know, you would have saved yourself on infrastructure costs, and maybe you got too heavy on people, which is always hard to back into. So I've seen that. And we've seen it way, 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 way overbuilt as well. And we just said, you know, you could have pulled back about $400,000 ago, because how many cars, right? How many cars do you have to wash to pay for that incremental, you know, overage? So I've seen it done both ways. When we look at organizations, I don't know how many people in the audience know this, but Aziz is an engineer by training. And so he is a tech guy, and we like to see when companies at least acknowledge or have started to embrace technology. I'll tell you, at Frisch's, we have a full IT team on site there. Of course, that's a $220 million company, so they've got a full right. IT team on site there that works with all the company store POSs and whatnot. And then we've got a team at Fuzzy's that is would blow your mind. They are that good. And so we've been very blessed to get into organizations that have great technology basis. The other things I would say, Paul, to follow up on that, technology obviously is one that we always look at. Having a consistent POS across this unit is probably one of the most crucial pieces, amazingly enough. So that's also interesting. But we want to see leadership. We want the leadership to be passionate about what they're doing and not begrudgingly take on a partner, right? That, if that's going to be the case, it's not going to be a great fit. Just like Stan said, when a franchisee is looking at going into a brand, if they're not all in on whatever brand they're doing, boy, that's going to be a challenged relationship for the long haul, you know. And when we went into the Fuzzy's company to meet the team for the first time, which was so wonderful, you know, we just said, look, change is hard, even when it's really positive change. And we've been dating for the last, you know, 17 months. We've been working on this transaction, and transactions do take a long time sometimes to come together. You got to be patient. But we've been dating for 17 months. We got married. And now we're back from our honeymoon, and we're staring at each other going, oh, God, now we got to talk about family. We got to talk about finances. You know, we got to talk about all those things that are really tough, and we got to talk about you know, do you squeeze the toothpaste from the middle or from the bottom? And we're going to have disagreements like that along the way. And that analogy is not mine. My very dear friend Mary Thompson at the Dwyer Group helped me understand that because that's one of her coaching tools. But it's no different than what any of us have used in franchise development, right? You date, and then you get married when you sign that agreement. And you're kind of locked together there.
Absolutely. You know, when you see a lot of leaders that have been around the block a few times, and it could be in politics, it could be corporations, it doesn't matter. You always see the jovial side, you see the business side, but then there's a human side. And I want to ask you specifically about a picture that came out of Franchising Gives Back, where you're standing in front of Paul Pickett of Wild Birds Unlimited, and he's got his hands on your shoulders. And it seemed like there was a deep conversation going on there. Is there something that you could share about that? Because I know that at times you've got to get some things off your chest.
Yeah, no, I am eternally grateful for franchising, for the friendships that I have. Paul is absolutely a major relationship in my life, but I've got several friends that have been, you know, just stand beside me. Many of you know Nancy Bigley, and Nancy Bigley celebrated a big birthday yesterday. So what did we do? You know, Nancy and myself and Tina Romanello and Sonda Kitchen, we packed up our bags and headed to Key West to celebrate a birthday, right? And
awesome.
you've got to find that place where you can have, where it's a safe space. And with Paul, with his arms on my shoulders, that's a safe space for me. And you have to, there are only so many of those relationships that each of us gets blessed with. And franchising has brought me many, many of those that I have in my life. But yeah, we had to have the talk. And he called me yesterday. He needed to vent. I can't remember if in that picture whether I was venting or he was venting. But you've got to have the time because, you know, life is hard, right? Mm-hmm. We all know that. And my prayers go out to Dr. Hayes and his family as well. And life is hard. And you got to have friends and support groups to lean on. And I talked a little bit about my husband earlier that I just I said to him the other night, thanks for basically being a single dad the last couple months, because that's what this time period needed. And I absolutely know that if it wasn't for him, I would not be out pursuing the things that I feel are the very best opportunity in franchising.
Susan, with less than 2 minutes left, for the audience that doesn't yet share that kind of wonderful relationship and lifelong friendships that you've already been able to endure, tell our audience how to find you, tell our audience where you might be next that they may meet you, and how they can get in touch with you to learn more.
Yeah, please do. So I'm on LinkedIn as Susan E. Black Beth, my maiden name, B-L-A-C-K hyphen Beth, B-E-T-H. And you can find me at sbeth, B-E-T-H, at nrdcapital.com. My connection is also up on our website, which is just nrdcapital.com. And I will be out in the world of franchising. I will be at the Restaurant Leadership Conference in Phoenix in the beginning of April. I will be at the Multi-Unit Franchise Show at the end of April. I will be at the NRA, which is National Restaurant Association, in May. So, yeah, we will be out and about. And please, if I call you and say that something about your brand intrigued me, please call me back. I'll be a friendly person. But do know that if I call you and I tell you that something about your brand intrigued me when I found you through one of the many places that I find folks, please give me a call back or send me an email. I promise I will be friendly and treat you well.
Awesome. Paul,
that's great. Yep.
I think we've got to put a ribbon on this one and wrap it up and put a top on it. It's been the fastest hour I can remember since we've been doing this together.
Yep, absolutely. Susan, thanks for returning to Franchise Today. We look forward to having you on again in the future.
Thanks, guys. Always awesome to talk to both of you, whether in person or on the show. Take good care, okay? Be safe.
Sounds great. Well, Stan, wrapping up, I think we're right at the 45-second mark, and you're right. This show blew by. So until next week, same time, same station, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising, and Franchise Today is out.